The Six Pointer Podcast.
Hello and welcome to the Six Pointer Podcast. It's another special. It's always a special on the Six Pointer Podcast, but it's especially special when Luke and I are joined by the man himself. Kev, you are back with us, mate. Where's the summer gone? Because it was May and we were doing an end-of-season review. Now we're looking ahead.
Mate, yeah, doesn't seem that long ago you were ripping me apart about my inability to drink Guinness properly. I've even edited that one out of the actual pod last time because some of the wings were said by your brother. But, mate, I don't know where the summer's gone, but I'm looking forward to catching up with you. And thank you. Thank you for inviting me back on, guys. I feel privileged. I feel as though, you know, kids have gone back to school, but now it's worth it now because we're back doing the pod with you boys. So very happy.
Back by popular demand, I'd say, Kev.
Thanks, mate. I wish.
Definitely. Yeah. Luke, how are you doing? All right?
Yes, not too bad. Thanks, mate. Enjoyed, obviously, Palace's second half performance against Chelsea. Had a couple of days to digest and think about it, and I've currently got Doncaster Huddersfield in the background here, and it's 1-1 in the Johnson Pate Trophy, or whatever it is called now, Bristol Street Movies Trophy. So yeah, plenty of football going on, mate, even though it's international break. Can't get away from it. Loving it.
Well, it makes it a good excuse, isn't it, to catch up on Palace. And we're going to talk about the Chelsea game, as you mentioned, the 1-1 draw at Stamford Bridge on Sunday lunchtime, and then we'll also talk about transfer window, given obviously that slammed shut, everyone had their yellow gear out on Friday. So yeah, lots to cover on both angles. Before we get into that, at Six Pointer Podcast on Instagram and Twitter, thank you to everyone who's not Twitter, sorry, X. I've got to get that right, haven't I? Now
still Twitter, isn't it? Still Twitter, doesn't it?
Let's call it Twitter, yeah. So yeah, that's how you can get in contact with us, and follow and like and share. And thank you to everyone who has got in contact, because we've got quite a few questions, haven't we, for what will be part three of this pod this evening as well. So yeah, let's get into it. So Chelsea away, Stamford Bridge, never an easy game. Luke, you'll have the stat for how many times we haven't won there. I think it's 2015, I want to say.
Yeah.
Benteke,
I think you might be right there, brother. And then, yeah, obviously, I think the last victory we had against was Roy Hodgson's first victory in charge of Crystal Palace. So I think that made it like 17 games against Chelsea that Palace hadn't got a point out of. So yeah, nice to break that duck, as it were, on Sunday. And realistically, probably could have been more given the second half performance. But it felt like more of a victory in the end of it, didn't it? By the 8 minutes of injury time was up on Sunday. I think perhaps we were the more disappointed, more than Chelsea, that we had a draw.
So you were very positive about the outcome and the performance. Luke, Kev, how about you? How did you see it?
Yeah, well, to be honest with you, Matt, unfortunately, I've only seen it via Match of the Day and the 30 minutes or so from, I think, what they put on Sky. So I was very grateful to get a point. I mean, I'm going to put my anorak on. It was the 29th of August in that year that was mentioned, 2015, that we last beat them over their place. I think it was Benteke and Wilf, and it was my birthday that day, and I happened to be watching Charlie and the Chocolate Factory, but it was nice to come and know that we'd won that night. This is what happens when you've got young children. So I was very, very pleased that we got the point there, and I thought it was really, really important that we did get the point, actually. You don't want to be going into an international break with no points on the board. So I'm very pleased that we got the point, and good to see Eze getting another, you know, great strike. Let's be honest, he's had at least one great strike in the three games I've seen so far this season. Obviously, one which was disallowed, which should have been allowed at Brentford. The one which crashed against the crossbar against West Ham, and another beautifully, let's be honest, he glided it into the goal, didn't he? A stunning goal. So I was pleasantly surprised that we got the point, and I think that's a great point as opposed to two lost.
Yeah, I think you're right. If we went into the international break with nothing on the board, the league table would look very, very sort of bad for us, wouldn't it? Also, it's probably fair to say it wouldn't have reflected the start. And you could argue that Brentford, we could have taken a point from that. I think West Ham, bar two breaks, we probably could have won that game. That was unfortunate. So I think, yeah, it was good. To be fair, I think we had a bit of luck go our way on Sunday. I think Luke mentioned the second half performance. I thought Chelsea were by far, far the better team in the first half. Second half, Palace picked up, and I think that was largely because of Doucouré coming on. He gave us so much solidity in the middle, and him and Walton look so good together. I know he's not 100%, but he's still on 80% sort of fit. Doucouré, I think, should be in the team. And I think we were lucky also because Will Hughes was walking a tightrope, wasn't he, after the
Absolutely.
foul that he had to make in the first half, to be fair. But, I know Glazer said that they talked about taking him off half time, and they probably should have done, really, because he was lucky to get away with that. Paul, was it on Jackson?
Palmer, I think it was, wasn't it?
Palmer, sorry, yes. And Palmer probably did him a favour by sort of anticipating a tackle and backing off on his run a bit, because otherwise it looked like a right yank back. But yeah, I think we were lucky to have 11 men in the second half to push on, if I'm honest.
100%.
And also Dimitri Kamada as well. It felt like he was doing his best to try and get sent off or get a yellow card in the first 10 minutes, wasn't he? He was an interesting player, and perhaps we'll come on to talk about him a bit more in part two. We do the sort of transfer review, but I from the sort of the Norwich game, obviously when he got his first goal for the club, a competitive goal for the club, we were starting to see him come out a little bit more out of his shell, a little bit more. And I did say, I think, during watching the Norwich game, that I want to see him being a bit braver. Perhaps he's a confidence player, and he needs to have that little bit more sort of confidence, give him a bit of oomph, because he's clearly got the quality, and he's needs to perhaps grow into the Premier League. But he certainly was no short of confidence that first sort of 10, 15 minutes when he was knocking people over left, right, and centre, and making a few sort of very late challenges to himself, walking a bit of a tightrope. But yeah, I think you're right, bruv. Doucouré made a huge difference in the second half to Palace's performance, and was a huge attribute in the reason that we got the point.
I think the thing is, Luke and Matt as well, just having Doucouré back, it feels like a new signing, doesn't it? I appreciate he's not a new signing, but we were so long without him, and I think we suffered as a club when he wasn't there. Will's done a fantastic job, but as you said, lucky to stay on the pitch. And again, good management. Yes, I think from what I saw, Glasner had said it was on him. He'd made the mistake. They should have taken him off earlier. He didn't, but then he reacted immediately. And that to me is good management. Yes, we were lucky. You're right. But then, we pushed on from there, and that's good. And having Doucouré back, and the fact the international break has mostly come at a good time for him. Because, as you say, and it's the same with you just said there, Luke Kamada, takes a couple of days, takes a couple of games, doesn't it, for people to find their feet, and he's got, for those who aren't aware, on international duty, what, he's got another sort of 10, 12 days to work with them. That's brilliant, with Doucouré coming back in as well. So I'm very, very pleased, actually, that we got the point, and where it takes us over the next few weeks when we come back.
To be fair, Chelsea, like I said, the better team, but they had a number of chances in the first half. I mean, in both halves, in fact, Henderson pulled off some fantastic saves. I mean, obviously, everyone will look at the one that he's right at the death when he sort of managed to stay roughly in his goal line or thereabouts. Excuse me, with Jackson sort of running at him and celebrated that one big time, didn't he? But there was a couple that he tipped over the bar. I think one in the first half, one in the second half as well. From the, was it Cole Palmer free kick as well? So we ran a bit of a tightrope with the sort of the Will Hughes situation, but also Henderson keeping us in it. Probably man of the match, would you say, from Sunday?
Certainly for me, bruv. I think, without Dean Henderson, we don't get a point there on Sunday. It's interesting, the sort of the whole sort of fan view on the whole Henderson Johnson situation. And again, perhaps we'll come on talk about that more in part two. But the fact remains is that Dean Henderson is our number one now, and he's started to show his worth. I talked about the Norwich game earlier, and I think he was brilliant in that, making a couple of excellent saves in that that game as well. And you know, that's what we always need from a goalkeeper. You know, you think about the excellent Crystal Palace goalkeepers we've had over the years. They've won us points, and Dino certainly did that on Sunday. And lovely to hear the chants of Dino from the away end. Always makes me think of Dean Gordon, but yeah, it was nice to hear.
What about another man who came in and did a real job for us, who never fails to disappoint? Kev, Nathaniel Klein.
Yeah. I mean, what can you say? What can you not say about Nathaniel Klein? You know, he's like a Duracell bunny, and he just keeps going. And you know, talk about have a new lease of life since he's come back to us. And he's been brilliant. You know, I thought when he lost his place, you know, not that'll be it. It's going to be hard to come back in. But yet again, he's come in and, you know, dying for the badge, really, as far as I'm concerned. So I'm just really, really pleased. I just feel, I know we'll come on to it later, but I just feel that Glasner's really got this group gelling nicely. And, you know, I know we're all disappointed after what happened at Brentford and that. And from what you guys have said, we were very unlucky at West Ham, and fair play, their two goals. But I'm really, really quite excited about where this team goes, particularly, and again, I know it'll be part three after the transfer window. You know, I'm very excited about what the future looks like, and certainly what leading up to Christmas can look like for Palace.
Yeah, you talked about Glasner there, Kevin. I think one thing you can see is the energy in the team, you know, the pressing that we're doing. I think Match of the Day highlighted that in some of their analysis as well, the fact that, you know, the Palace midfield and defence are always pressing to try and get win the ball back or put the other team under pressure. And that was highlighted with Nathaniel Klein's tracking back there in the last minute for the Dean Henderson-Jackson finish there, where he put pressure on him as well and certainly contributed towards the, Jackson perhaps not hitting that as cleanly as he would like. But yeah, you're right, Kevin. Klein has had a new lease of life, especially under Glasner. You know, he's been moved inside to become part of that back three. Out of necessity, really, obviously, where Chaddy Riad got injured against Norwich. But I'm excited also to see, you know, Chalobah come in there and how that dynamic's going to work. And we've got a real sort of depth now of quality. And I think we did say, we went from one extreme to the other, you know, against Brentford, we saw the bench. We were like, oh, what a bench. And then we saw it against Chelsea and we were like, bloody hell, we've got three kids on the bench who have never played a minute of Premier League football. But I appreciate, obviously, you know, Nketiah and Chalobah the American keeper whose name escapes me.
Turner.
Yeah, Matt Turner. I weren't registered in time, you know, to be able to be on the bench. But, you know, I think we'll see that certainly against Leicester.
Yes. So look, he's desperate to talk about the transfer window because he mentioned it three times now. He even started naming people he signed. So look, I'm going to move us on. Sum up then, good point away at Chelsea. Something to build on, as we said, going into the break, but also coming back out of it and into a big game, right, against Leicester at home on the 14th, I want to say. Might have made that date up.
Next Saturday.
But, yes, thank you. So, yeah, so lots to look forward to there. We won't break. We'll go straight into it because it's something that I know everyone's keen to get into and I'm sure the listeners will be. And I know that we'll have... Well, we've got lots of questions actually about this and related. But Kev, I'll start with you. How do you see Palace's summer transfer window activity? What's your sort of thoughts and views on where we got to and where we ended up?
Right. So quite simply for me, Matt, if I can start on who didn't go, which is important, which is the Mark Gay thing. Now, for me, obviously, you know, we all know what happened in the Euros. And we thought with every performance, he was putting an extra £5 million on his price tag. And when we sold Elise for, what, 50-odd million, I'm thinking, well, if he's only gone for 50, what are we going to get for Mark if that was the case? And let's be honest, at no point did he ask to go, my understanding. And I thought, well, where do Palace sort of say that's how much we will take? So I thought it'd be 75 million. We turned down 70. So I think the fact that Mark Gay stayed is a massive statement. And if you then look at what's been bought in, you know, with the likes of the Chalabars and some of those other players that have come in, I think the window's been very good for us. Yes. Did I want to see AU go? No, you know, but the reality of it is I don't want to use one of Luke's old terms, but in Roy we trust, in Oliver I very much trust, and I'm confident whatever he gets has bought in has been well researched. So I think personally, Matt, it's been a real good window for us, as much about keeping Mark and keeping Eze and other players we're going to build around them. So I'm very, very excited. I can't pretend to know a lot about a lot of the other players, with the exception of Chalabar. But I think it's been a very good window for us, and I'm very, very excited about where it takes us.
Yeah, I think in terms of sort of the outgoings, obviously Elise was the flagship outgoing, as it were, and people were disappointed to lose him for the money that we did. But, you know, that was the basis on which we signed him. That was the basis that we renegotiated that contract the summer before, where Chelsea was sniffing around him and Man City was sniffing around him. So, you know, I think, you know, people talk about this model of the club and what they're trying to do, and it has to be you buy Michael Olise for 7 million, you sell him to Bayern Munich for 53 million, whatever it is, and that's the way a club like Crystal Palace will survive until they get into Europe and can keep these players. But, you know, I think Anderson was an interesting one. I think that's a good bit of business. I was disappointed to see him go because, you know, you miss that range of passing. He was certainly probably the more physical of centre backs out of him and Gay, wasn't he? I always sort of hark back to that battle he had with it was the long haired bloke from Liverpool. You know what I mean?
Yeah,
oh, Nunes.
Is it Nunes?
Nunes.
He got him sent off, didn't he? Up in Anfield, yeah. And that just sort of highlighted that sort of physical attributes he had. You know, he bullied him that day, and we saw him do that quite a lot in the Palace shirt, you know, bullying defenders. Sam Johnstone obviously went to Wolves for something like 10 million. Again, that's a custom, he says, good bit of business, get him a free, sell him for 10 million. And realistically, that was never going to be a long term thing where you could keep both him and Dean Henderson happy. I have to be said, it's with a heavy heart I saw Jordan Ayew leave for Leicester. Probably a good bit of business again, where they're talking about sort of 5 to 8 million. We bought him for 2.5. But, bruv, we've talked about for many, many years Jordan Ayew and his ability to give Palace some breathing space by winning those fouls, being very clever in sort of getting his body between the man and the ball and winning those drawing those fouls, as it were. I don't know that we've got anyone who can sort of do that in the team, but you know, the progression of Crystal Palace has to be, I guess, that you replace them with someone younger and with more potential. And I was worried up until, I think, sort of Wednesday, Thursday, where I was thinking, right, we got rid of Elise, Ayew, Edouard's gone on loan as well. Hamad has also gone out on loan. We're severely lacking in that sort of like attacking area, and we needed to do some business, and you know, we did, obviously, with Nketiah coming in. I'm not sure he's worth 25 million, but then again, he's got Premier League experience, and probably that's the starting rate, isn't it, for that sort of player. Hopefully he can do the business, but we certainly needed to give JP some competition up there at the front.
I think it's interesting because I'm really mixed on it, if I'm honest with you. If I look at the ins and outs from, you know, who we lost, both the people that you guys mentioned in terms of who we sold, some of which was kind of a choice. So the Anderson was a decision to make, clearly, and apparently the Anderson situation with the money he's got at Fulham, north of 100-something grand a week, you know, Palace weren't going to pay that. So, you know, felt like a good deal, also with the number assigned to the transfer fee. And probably with Anderson, I reckon we've probably seen the best of him. So if you think about last season, it was quite a mixed set of performances. And, bruv, the Liverpool game you mentioned is probably my highlight of his time with us, but weren't too many occurrences of that in the last 12 months that you can look back to. So I think that made sense. I think, like you said, the goalkeeper situation made sense. Turner obviously isn't a Sam Johnstone equivalent, but he would do a job as needed, and hopefully we don't need to ask him to do a job. And it feels like with that one, there might be maybe a longer-term, more strategic play there in terms of bringing someone a bit younger potentially. either in January if acquired, or maybe next year when Turner's loan's up. You can see people like Riyad's got real potential. Lacroix, I'm probably pronouncing that incorrectly, someone Gladstone knows very, very well, and is very highly rated by him. So that feels like a good move. Chalobah, it feels like, again, a really good move. I know he's very well thought of amongst the Chelsea fan base. So it feels like a good move. So if you think about like the back half of the team, goalkeeping and defensively, it feels like, you know, it's pretty much an upgrade in that respect. I guess my frustration is probably more in the second half of the pitch, where obviously you're never going to be able to replace Elise, right? There's no replacement for him. And as you say, Luke, with the model being that we bring these people in and give them a chance and to develop, and then they become the next Elise, that's what my frustration is. We haven't done that. We haven't replaced him with someone who brings that chaos factor, that something different that the opposition are going to think twice or going to put one or two men on him. And that's where the Wilf option for me was quite attractive, because he would have provided that, albeit not the same legs, and you know, he's probably lost a bit of his edge in the sense, but I know it didn't happen obviously for tax reasons, but you know, that was, that for me is the main area. And then, did we need Nketiah? That's a question in my mind, you know, with JP firing. I guess if he made a decision about Edouard and Ayew that was different to the outcome that's ended up with them both departing, obviously Edouard on loan, but Jordan permanently. I don't know. I'm not sure. I'm yet to be proven. Let's yet to believe that that was the sort of the right set of moves for us. I very much hope it does work out. Having said that, I'm just not sure how they're all going to play in that team, and how it's going to work in that formation, which is obviously a headache that Gladstone will have to work with. The last one, the last two that come to mind are Sarr and where he will play. Does he bring the Elise element that we're going to miss maybe with some of the chaos to it? And obviously you mentioned Kamada, who I've been, I think, really impressed with actually. And I think there's lots of parallels to me here, and bear with me on this one, but to Jedinak, in the sense that when he came into the Palace team, albeit it was in the Championship, people were very quickly making opinions and assessments of him. You know, he's not good enough, not slight, not big enough, not with the game, you know, not quick enough, all those sorts of things. A lot of parallels to Kamada and how he's bedding in. So it'll be interesting to see how that does pan out. Sorry, guys, I've just absolutely narrated at you there for 5 minutes. Go on, Luke.
I think that front line, bruv, is one that I'm a little concerned around. I mean, I would have liked to have kept Edouard as another option, because, you know, if JP gets injured, your out and out front man is Nketiah. So then who have you got to come on? But I think what we saw against Chelsea was Ismaïla Sarr came on and played that sort of role up front, didn't he? I think it was either him and Eze sort of played as like a two false nines, almost a bit like we saw with Zaha and Townsend in the early Roy years, when we didn't have, I didn't think we had a, it would have been Tekkers wouldn't have been fit at that time. But so I think it's going to be a bit fluid. I was also a little bit concerned that we let Rakitić go a little bit too early. And I don't think we've got that many out and out wingers. You know, obviously Sarr maybe can play out there as well, but it would have been nice to keep him, albeit I appreciate that, you know, he smashed it in the Championship this season. You know, he's going to be right in the Palace squad next year, isn't he? Let's be honest. And same with David Ozo, who's started quite well for Derby as well. You know, if he can really make a name for himself and prove himself in the Championship, you know, Palace have been brilliant at going, picking the cream of the crop of the Championship. We've now got our own players out there and doing the business. So if those two players can prove their worth in that league, it's another string to our bow next season. But yeah, it will certainly be interesting to see sort of where, how Sarr plays out, because I think he did quite well when he came on against Chelsea. You know, he's got that pace. He's got that ability to run at people and scare defenders. And I think probably that's where we're seeing being used most, is off the bench with a bit of legs when you need someone to run at tired defenders. And I think he'll make a real difference.
So, you know, we haven't got an opportunity now, have we, to make any changes apart from free agents who can be signed within the next, is it 10 days, 2 weeks, I think?
I think it's up until the 14th.
Right. So before the Leicester game, basically. Yeah, I'm not sure the Palace would delve into that. I think Dougie and Co have probably worked with what they wanted to get in. You know, there's not been any talk of targets not being met, certainly. So be interested to see how it pans out. I think, as we've all alluded to, how it all comes together. And as you said, Kev, have faith in Glasner and his team, yeah, and to make it work. And look, we know it will be fluid. You know, someone will be injured or suspended. You're never going to, well, very rarely going to have the first choice 11. But it will be interesting to see how, like, yeah, Nketiah gets into the team, the Sarr get more regular runs out, and so on and so forth. So, and the defensive lineup will also be interesting, right? I can't imagine Chalab has come to sit on the bench, that's for sure.
Exactly my point I was going to make there, bruv, is that, you know, like you said, he's very highly rated at Chelsea. Some Chelsea fans thought he was their best centre-back. So the fact that we've got him, I think, is a bit of a coup, you know. I think currently the manager says that, you know, anyone that wasn't in his sort of plans wanted to go, you know, he wasn't interested in having at the club. But I don't really think that the manager will be at the club too long when it's given Chelsea's track record. So that might all change come January or December. I've got my money on sort of mid-November before he gets the sack. So yeah, it all could change. But I've been very impressed with what I've seen of Chalobah in a Chelsea shirt. I'd love to see him perform well in a Palace shirt. And, you know, if that can go well and, you know, it leads to a permanent deal, then that would be a fantastic bit of business. But Kev, obviously you're the Chelsea expert. What's your sort of rating of Chalobah coming in?
Yeah, absolutely. I was delighted when I saw it on Friday that he was coming, you know, but particularly with Mark staying as well. I thought it was perfect business. And I'm, as I sort of alluded to earlier, Luke, I'm really excited because I think with the way Glasner's got, I think the club buzzing, really, if I'm honest. It is exciting. I know we never want to get too far ahead of ourselves, but I love the fact that actually, for me, the international break has come at a good time with them getting the point. Because he can work on these, he can do some of that stuff. I know some will be away on international duty, but they won't all be. You know, we're going to have a goalkeeper, as you say, in who's never backwards and coming forwards anyway about his own ability. You know, you've only got to look at how he felt when he was at Man United. So I'm really happy with that because actually, and this isn't to upset our dear Evertonian friends, but you know, Jordan Pickford is doing really, he's a phenomenal goalkeeper, but he's in a team that's struggling at the moment, right? Mm-hmm. A new interim England coach coming in, although no one's going to mess with the formula, but actually Dean Henderson is pushing quite hard at the moment, you know, and that's only good for Palace, you know, with what the new back four. So I'm really quite excited to see how it gets. I'm with you both. You know, I remember Nketiah more when we nearly got him a few years ago when they were doing the Arteta documentary and he'd nearly come and then he sort of, it was a little bit of a, you know, not a mess. He seemed to sort himself out. He got a phenomenal hat-trick last year. They keep showing that goal where it hit the back of the net before the keeper had even moved. So I think he can be really good. And then, as you say, when you throw in that chaos factor, I'm really, as I said, really quite excited about what it's going to look like and how we're going to move forward. So I think the Leicester game, as you say, is it's a big game early doors. As long as Jordan doesn't score against us, you know, because that would be tough to see. You know, well, and I take it Edouard won't be able to play against us, will he? Is that part of the loan deal? So he won't be able to play against us. So, you know, it'd be good to see, you know, Jordan, but equally hard to see him in someone else's shirt. But I still think we should have enough about us to start to kick on a bit now. And I'm really quite excited about that. And I think we'll get 3 points against Leicester.
Let's hope so, Kip. But you mentioned England there. Again, Palace have got, you know, a few players in the lineup there, obviously Eze, Gay and Henderson. And it's nice that we're getting that consistency now. Palace players getting called up consistently for Europe. You know, obviously, you mentioned Kev Gay's excellent performance in the Euros, but, you know, it's a very real possibility that you're going to have three Palace players starting for England against Ireland and Finland on Saturday and Tuesday, respectively. And, you know, after years of me not having much interest in international football, it makes me want to watch the games a bit more now. So, yeah, I'll certainly be enjoying them.
The thing is, sorry to cut across you, and I know he's not been put in this squad, but it won't be long before you're seeing Adam Walton regularly in there. Because again, in the limited which I've been able to see, he's still moving the ball as quick, as fast, and he's just going to get better and stronger. So I have absolutely no doubt. Yes, I can understand what Carsley's done at the moment, but, you know, I'm actually quite relieved as when Southgate took him, I thought there's a chance he'll play him. When he didn't, I think that done us a favour as Crystal Palace, because I think if anyone had seen him perform, a bit like they were chomping at the bit to get Gay, I think people would have been coming in after Walton. So I quite like that, because I think we need another season of him with us, and I think this young man is going to be phenomenal. And you know, let's be honest, if we're in a situation where we've got three or four, maybe even five Palace players pushing to be in the England squad or in the international squad, then that tells us we're making good progress. And under Glasner, I think they will. I really do. I really do believe that.
Who's your fifth, Kev? Nathaniel Clyne?
Yeah, Trevor Chalabar.
Oh, I like it. Very good. Yeah, very good. Well, we will see. I think an interesting window for Palace, and like we said, lots to look forward to and build upon. And let's hope that we get through the international break with everyone unscathed, and Glasner's got a real headache in terms of selection. We'll pause briefly now for a break, and then in part two, we will cover questions from our listeners. So keep it six pointer. Welcome back to part two of the Six Pointer Podcast. At Six Pointer Podcast, Instagram, on Twitter. Don't forget to get in touch with us. And well done to all those. Congratulations to all those that have, because we are going to cover your questions now. Before we do that, though, Kev, a word from your mum, please.
Boys, what can I tell you? Mum told me she's very happy with the transfer window. Keep up the good work. She loves all the episodes, so keep doing what you do. And she's off on a cruise soon, so big up the seal.
Hello, Kev's mum.
Big shout out to Kev's mum, as always. We should bring her into the jingles, maybe. We can get Kev's mum into the jingles, maybe. Let's talk about that afterwards. Kev's mum, want to get involved in the jingles? We want to get your voice involved. Look, questions from our listeners. So bruv, you're the MC for this part. I'm gonna hand over to you. I know we've got a few interesting ones on the transfer window, on formations, on the season as a whole. So go on, lead us away.
So just looking for the old DMs here, and thank you for everyone who has got in touch. We are going to be better at answering these questions now, or highlighting at least, anyway, or creating a topic of discussion.
Well, at least today, anyway.
That's true. So, Tom McDonald asks, is the plan for Nketiah and Mateta up front together? Hope so. And Paul Frost asks, what's going to be our best first choice attacking lineup? So it's kind of the same question, I guess, isn't it? I mean, are we expecting to see them both play together? Is that going to be what Glasner's going to go with? Or is that going to be what the fans are going to want to see? Kev?
Oh, that's a real good one, actually. I like to think you would play them together, but I'm just trying to think of how that works with the rest of the formation. But yeah, my gut reaction, sorry, I'm going to go to Matt because he might have thought this deeper than I have, but I'd like to think that you could play them together, but, you know, yeah, I'll leave it at that. Sorry, Luke, I've not really answered that very well, but yeah, I think so. Play them together. Let's see how it goes.
So on the basis that he plays that front three, I think you're likely to see one of them in the middle. That one for me, well, I don't think Mateta can play as one of the wide men, can he? So I think you're going to see him down the middle or not. Nketiah, again, I don't know if he could play as a wide player. I guess he's a bit more mobile, so potentially he could be an option to be one of the wide three. You've obviously got Eze, which is, you know, near on impossible to drop from that trio, so he's going to play. And then I guess you've got the dynamic of Kamada and Saar to think about there as well. And as we've already alluded to, there's no longer an IU headache, and Edouard is, not a headache for now. So, yeah. I think you could well see them together. I don't think it'll be a front two. I think it would be as part of that attacking front three combination.
Mm. Yeah, well, we sort of see that formation is pretty set in its way, isn't it, of the 5-2-2-1, as it were. So, but saying that, against Chelsea, obviously, you know, we saw Saar and Eze playing up front together as well, as I mentioned earlier. So I think you're right, brother, that Nketiah is obviously, you know, he's got a bit of pace. He can move around, so can Saar. So we'll probably see them interchanging and going, not wide, but as part of that sort of attacking unit. But
and this is sorry, this is where I come back earlier to my assessment of the window in the front top half of the pitch, in that, did we need another, let's call it a number nine, right, middleman, or did we actually need one of the attacking wingers, if you like, those two of the front three? And that's kind of where I'm thinking. But I'm excited to see where Nketiah fits into it. And as Kev mentioned, he's scored goals. He's just never had enough minutes, has he? It's not been a proper run. So hopefully he will get that for Palace. Just hope it's not at the detriment of JP if he manages to get going again, because I think he looks a bit tired. At least, to be fair, he hasn't had much of a break, has he? So that also might be part of the conundrum to manage there as well.
Yeah, that's a real good point, Matt, actually. He's had no break, has he, from almost the Olympics, because he was back literally a few days after, wasn't he? And then we were playing Brentford. I think he came back in on the Wednesday and we played Brentford on the Sunday. So I think that's a real, real good point, actually. So let's see. And again, 10 days between Saturday and obviously the next game or whatever it is. Let's see. He might be refreshed. Let's see how they work as a pair and go from there. What's your take, Luke?
Yeah, for me, it's going to be weird. I'm a very traditionalist in that, Kessie's got the number nine shirt. Therefore, I want to see him leading the line. It's going to be weird for me to see a number nine out wide. I appreciate we saw Ayew perhaps in that position, but he was never really out and out a wide player, was he? I think as it stands, JP will continue to start and Kessie will be sort of introduced slowly as his replacement. And let's face it, who would you rather have off the bench replacing JP? Would it be Odson Edouard or Eddie Nketiah? So hopefully if Nketiah hits the ground running, he can really start challenging him for that position. And it's a nice problem to have, isn't it? If we have got those two out-and-out big men up front, or number nines, as it were, that we've finally got, good competition for places.
Yeah, can I just add, though, Luke, I think if Nketiah comes on and his first game like Edouard did, and if he can score two goals in 15 minutes, we're going to love him forever, right? So end of. If you're listening, Eddie the Eagle, all right? Either the official Eddie the Eagle or the new Eddie the Eagle, okay? If you can bag two goals in 15 minutes, we'll give you some free six-pointer podcast merchandise, okay?
You're paying for that, Kev. All right, cool. next question comes from Charlie Barnett, who asks, who will score more goals for Palace this season? Nketiah, Mateta, or Eze? Go on, bruv.
Mateta.
Double figures?
11.
Nice. That's what we like to hear. I mean, completely pointless sort of saying that, right. Yeah.
I'll go Eddie the Eagle with 14.
Ooh. Come on, Kev.
Luke.
Eze.
How many?
Eze's last season in the Palace shirt is going to hit 16 goals.
Oh.
That's what I reckon. And then he's gonna go for £105 million in July next year.
To be fair, if that Brentford guy had been disallowed, he'd be on for your 16, wouldn't he? by ratio of goals per game, it's going to be interesting because he's still so important to us, and he's still our magic dust, if you like, our golden sprinkle in the team. And let's hope it's not his last season, but if it is. Well, regardless, he's going to be a big contributor to not just goals, but assists as well, isn't he? And, like we've already said, it's a nice problem to have those two strikers. I'm going for JP because I'm just thinking if he gets on a run of form like he did at the end of last year, you've seen he can do it. And if we can get the ball into the box, he can create stuff, and he can create some stuff from himself really as well. I saw one of the goals. It was like Palace did a thing about Jordan Ayew, didn't they? They did one for Anderson as well, but I'm a big IU fan, so I watched that one a few times over. Do you remember the 1-2 goal? I can't remember it was against the 1-2 with him and Mateta and IU in front of the home style.
Yeah. Against Arsenal, I think that was. Me and you were there, Kev.
Yeah.
Because that's the kind of goal that Mateta wasn't scoring before, because it was all coming off his backside, or there was one where it came at the top and hit off his back, and Eze scored the goal, didn't he, as a result. But I just think if Mateta can keep that vein of, or get that vein of form going again, I can see him getting into those numbers. That's not to say I can't see Eddie the Eagle, as Kev's coined him, getting into sort of a good number of goals as well, because with a good supply from Ezra and hopefully Sarr and Kamada and others, we can see his goals totted up as well. So yeah, interesting to see.
Just before we close that bit though, boys, I cannot let this go without Matthew Tyrrell calling Eze a golden sprinkle. And if you are listening, Eberiche, at any point, you are the best golden sprinkle we've ever had in our team. Thank you.
Oh my word, am I allowed to move on now?
Have I missed the meaning of what I've said there then?
No, but you called him a golden sprinkle.
Magic dust. Magic dust, you know what I mean.
A golden sprinkle. I love it. It's fantastic. Anyway, all right, move on.
Just talking about illegal there, just a word for the Palace media team. We did a great little 8-minute video on the YouTube page. I think it's on Palace TV as well. Around him going back to South London where he grew up, I think around Broccoli and Camberwell, around that sort of way, which was very nicely done. And I'm sure it was a sort of an added bit to sort of bring him back a South London lad. And no doubt the Palace media team, they're actually rinsing that over the coming weeks.
Well, on that, you know, he's friends with Ezra, with Gaye. So there's a number of them that are pals now, which is, you know, think about that, to be playing the Premier League with people that you were mates with from when you were little. I mean, what a fantastic thing that is to do. And it's one of those magic sprinkles that Palace offer, isn't it, for these players coming through and, you know, making it in the big time. So, yeah, South London and proud.
Definitely, mate. Definitely. Right. Next question comes from Rebecca Marshall, who asks, how many games will Joel Ward play this season? Now, that's an interesting one. Obviously, we talked about the defensive element there with Chalaba. Obviously, Riyad's out for 6 weeks, but he'll come back at some point. Now, we've got Gay, Richards, Klein, who can play on the inside there. Where are we expecting to see Joel Ward? Is he going to be a cup player? Is he going to be someone who, like you say, bruv, you know, when we get some injuries, is he going to come in and get a long run in the team?
Is this in subs appearance or full appearances?
She hasn't specified. She just how many games. So,
Oh, okay. So I reckon he'll be involved in full 10 games.
What's your mix of starts versus sub appearances?
Yeah, we want to know that, Ken.
Right, we'll go with 8 starts and 6 as a sub.
I'm sure Rebecca's pleased with that.
I think it's a really good question, because he's someone who consistently has played for Palace through his time with us, hasn't he? He's never really had a period where he's not played. And this is the first season we're looking at thinking, will he get a go? Don't forget, he can also play in that back three, can't he, as well? So, you know, if we need to fit in there, he's a very able replacement if we need for whoever of those back three can't play from the starting group. I think also, I know people say he hasn't got the legs and this, that, but he can do some marauding runs. He can get us into the top half of the pitch. So if Muniz did need to come off or get suspended or indeed be injured for a period, there's no reason why Joel Ward couldn't do that job for a period of time. I'm not going to suggest he could do it for 38 games in a season, but, you know, I think it will be down to circumstances that he will get a run of games rather than anything else. And also to Rebecca's question, also where it's maybe leading, or she may have not been, but regardless, the testimonial, right? It's got to be there soon, surely.
Absolutely.
I think he said he doesn't want it whilst he's still playing, so he's going to retire and then he'll have it. So, but you're right, Brian. I don't think we've really seen him out in the squad since sort of Aaron Wan-Bissaka's emergence, when obviously he played that whole season. I don't think he got a look in then. But like Kleine, we saw it last season, him move into the middle there and do a really good job. So I think that's where we're going to see him in bits and parts. And obviously, you know, we've lost James Tompkins, so we need that depth there, you know. And he's a more than able replacement for that short-term fix, I think.
And actually, you mentioned that Wan-Bissaka period running the team. I think he might have played, Ward might have played left back a few times there as well. That's another position he could play. So, you know, if Tyreek gets injured, you know, I know people like Schloppy being the backup, but so could Joel Ward. So, yeah, fingers crossed, Rebecca, okay, There'll be a few more appearances from him this year to come.
Maybe. I think, obviously, you know, that we've sort of gone from right and left back to wing backs now, haven't we? So, you know, Muniz and Mitchell. So, you know, you can certainly see Schloppy getting there. I don't know if Joel can consistently do that anymore, but, you know, he's always been, for me, one of the best crossers of the ball that we've got. So seeing him get into that attacking third and delivering balls, he can certainly still do a job. One more question. We've got time for one more. Phil Bourne has said, what will success look like for Crystal Palace this season? Winning the Carabao Cup, getting into Europe, or winning the Champions League? That's a bit excessive, Phil. But he says, please read my question out because it's my 20th wedding anniversary tomorrow. There we go.
Well, Kev. Are you going to throw that at me?
I am, Kev. I'm throwing it at you.
Right. Well, first things first. Happy anniversary to Phil. 20 years. Well, fair play. You deserve a medal, mate. Whoever you are. In a nice way. No. That's positive. You know, in this current climate, you know, 20 years is good. You know, it only seemed like yesterday, 20 years. What will success feel like? So, for me, I think success will always be, I think it's got to be, we've got to get in the top 10 this year, personally. And what I always want for Christmas is a decent run in the FA Cup to a semi-final or quarter-final or possibly a final, although 2016 still haunts us, or a decent run in the Carabao Cup. And let's be honest, QPR away, you would hope we could go there and get a result. So to not be out of the Carabao Cup in the first or second round would also be nice. So that would feel like success, a bit of a run. And I think from what Glasner did last week, I'm assuming you boys were there, he put out a real strong side against Norwich. So, again, that felt to me like a statement of intent. So, Phil and Mrs. Phil, happy anniversary. And that's what success feels like to me.
Yeah. Congrats to Phil and his wife again. Thanks for the question, because it's a really good one, isn't it? Because if you look at last season, you'd say, oh, it has to be progression in a sense of above 10th place. But I think the cup run, if Palace finished 13th and had a cup run and got to the final of the Carabao Cup and say they won it, I would take that. I would take that now. In fact, if Palace finished 16th, I'd take a cup run and you know, a victory in the cup. So
yeah,
I think it's got to be that, because then it opens up opportunity for Europe as well, doesn't it? Yes. Which again would be progress. I mean, that for me is utopia. If Palace got into Europe, even the sort of the early stages of it, you know, give me a trip to somewhere, a midweek trip to somewhere, I don't know, Latvia or something. I mean, that would be, I mean, for younger Palace fans, they might think I'm crazy here, but given the Palace lifetime that I've had, and Luke, you had, and Kev, you probably even more so would say this.
To see,
yeah, but you're much older than me, so you know. to see Crystal Palace in Europe, it's stuff of dreams. So yeah, Phil, I'll take that all day long. European jolly, please.
And thanks for the birthday mention last week, boys. Oh no, you both forgot, didn't you? Thanks for that.
I sent you a message, Kev. You never responded. Yeah,
I know you did. I'm only joking.
But just to add my 2 pence in there, a cup run would be nice. I think, you know, obviously the league has got to be the most important thing. You know, we finished 10th last season, so anything 10th and above would be ideal. But, you know, if we had a cup run, if we get to a final, we get to Wembley, I'm not a fan of these semi-finals at Wembley, but we get to a Wembley final and we can see Palace lift a bit of silverware. But also, on that, I mean, being safe in sort of, I don't know, late February would be nice as well, wouldn't it? You know, have enough points to be safe in late February, early March and not have to worry about it. Then you can really push on. And that's why they brought Glasner in, because they want us to push on and want us to get into that sort of Conference League, Europa League spaces. So, yeah, either a cup run or, you know, pushing up towards sort of 8th or 7th would be ideal. But I think realistically, I'm over the sort of the risk mitigator. I'd say, you know, comfortably sort of 10th to 13th and a Carabao Cup final in March. That would be lovely, please.
But Luke, can I just say, mate, you've just said you're not a fan of a Wembley semi-final. But listen, you and I know when we get your brother in press ordering the dough balls with his special app, don't tell me that weren't a great day.
It was.
Until Chelsea scored that first goal. Until, let's be honest, Loftus-Cheek got that first goal and then we became clueless. We were having the best day ever.
It was good until the football started, Kev.
Yeah. Don't let the football ruin a day out of the football, as they say. But Palace at Wembley is always special. The balloons, the atmosphere. Nobody does Wembley quite like Palace, but Well, or the Pizza Express free doubles or Matthew down Wembley Way, but you know,
obscenity.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, that will never be repeated again. Matthew doesn't even remember that happened.
Happened.
But you only have to listen to that podcast, I think, is to hear the sort of the euphoria in our voices. You know, as we're doing that pre-match, and then we come back for part two, and then everyone's very down. And hello, and welcome back to part two. This is my podcast. We just lost to Chelsea 2 days ago, but no, that was a great day out. Not mistake that, but it would be nice for us to go there and win it, wouldn't it? Come on.
Wouldn't it be lovely? Come on, in my lifetime. Come on, we can
Wait, do it for you, Kev.
I'm running out of time. Come on, guys, please.
You're not that old, are you, Kev? Well, yeah.
55 last week. Don't tell anyone. Anyway.
Just told a few tens of thousands of people there, Kev, because that's the
most emotional. I know. We wouldn't have it any other way.
Look, thank you very much to everyone who asked us questions. Have we got through the questions, bruv?
Most of them, there were a few quite similar, those are the majority of them, I think, yeah.
Okay, well, thank you very much to everyone who did write in. We hope we've answered them appropriately. If not, let us know. And particularly if Kev needs to come back on and answer them differently, we'll do that next time around. But look, thanks, chaps. Always lovely to spend an evening with you chatting, Palace. Nice to end in a positive. Talking about a Carabao Cup win at Wembley, Pizza Express trip, and then a trip to Pizza Express in Latvia maybe afterwards. See if we can manage that. But at 6 Point of Podcast, Instagram and the platform previously known as Twitter. If you want to get in touch. And as always,
up the Palace.
The 6 Point of Podcast.